League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. Fast-paced delivery that's sure to knock you for six with former England opening batsman. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show on Love Sport.
Good morning and welcome to Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show. Aren't you guys lucky? We're going to be here every weekday morning between 10 and 11 discussing all the biggest talking points and speaking to all the biggest guests. We'll be kicking off today by discussing whether England's bowling attack is a little too fragile and can they hold it through 11 matches in this World Cup, and whether the home side can deal with the pressures of being tournament favourites. With just 2 days to go until the World Cup gets underway, Captain Owen Morgan says that's not something he's worrying about.
The pressure is actually quite a huge opportunity. I'd much rather be going in favourites than not even considered contenders.
We'll also be getting stuck into the issue of sledging, giving you the inside track on England's first opponent, South Africa. So make sure you don't go anywhere for the next hour. But I'm joined today by a good mate, Guy Watts. Morning, Guy. How are you doing?
Morning, Nick. Very well. Very excited about this new show. Got a great hour ahead of us, haven't we?
Well, we certainly have. There's a lot of pressure around England, though. A lot of talk about England. Is this something you think they can really pull together this time?
I hope so. I hope so so badly. I've watched, even in my relatively short experience of being an England cricket fan, enough World Cup failures to have all my hopes pinned on this one. I don't think I've ever thought we could actually win a tournament before. I've certainly thought we should be doing better than getting knocked out in group stages and losing to Bangladesh. But I really think it's different this time. I'm hopeful that we've got enough. I'm hopeful that even with an injury or two, we've got enough. But I think that's kind of the main talking point today, isn't it? We've had a couple of scares in the last, week, or maybe even just over the weekend with that Australia game. It seemed like everyone was going off at some point with an injury. It looks like we're going to have all 15 players available for that first game, which is a really nice bonus. But I think it's fair to say it was a little bit worrying, wasn't it? When, especially with Mark Wood and that left heel, that left foot he's had so many problems with. I mean, is he in your first choice 11, by the way? I mean, if Mark Wood is fully fit and firing, is he in that first choice 11 for you?
Well, absolutely. Look, I think it's been a really talking point. I mean, you look at Greg Chappell's article yesterday saying that the best bowling attacks are going to win this World Cup. And I think if you look at England, have they got the best bowling attack? I'm not sure. I think fully fit they have. And I think a guy like Mark Wood, who you just alluded to, if he's bowling up in the region of 91, 92 mile an hour, that's an X factor for me. Same with Jofra Archer. You know, Jofra Archer has been a sort of a bit of a left field pick. Not left field in the sense that he's not good enough, but left field in that he hasn't been in the World Cup plans. He's come on board. And I think if the two of them are fit and firing, I think England have that X factor. But, my worry is injury. Mark Wood limping off the other day, you know, having had three operations to that ankle. You know, 10:30 starts, England bowl first, Archer, Wood, and works with his skills. I think that's a decent bowling attack. But my worry is in the backup. And I come back to some of these warm-up games, and you look at the fact that they've played the likes of Curran, Plunkett, who, you know, as much as we love him, as much as he's done a great job for English cricket, particularly in the one-day format, is he on a decline?
So you said there, Wokes, Wood and Archer. That's your sort of first choice.
That's my top three.
So you're leaving out Liam Plunkett, who's got more wickets in the middle overs than anyone since the last World Cup. Is that a really tough call, or is that just what you have to, the kind of call you have to make at World Cups and in international sport? How tough will that conversation be?
Well, it's a very tough conversation, but I think such is the culture in the team now where Liam Plunkett will be needed. Don't worry about that. You know, there'll be times where he will come to the fore. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it is about timing. It is about form. Jofra Archer is the man of the moment. You know, he's got a bit of extra pace. I think he's a bit younger. He's on the incline. And you've got to catch it at the right time. And I think England at now have the strength, have the depth, whereas in the past, Liam Plunkett would have played. I think now they've got the confidence to go, you know what, you've been fantastic for us, but actually, this is a better choice right now.
Just like with David Willey and not making the whole squad. I mean, that must have been an extremely tough conversation. I think he half expected it, probably, with all that was being written. And he knew Jofra Archer was in the squad, right? And he knew that someone had to miss out. And I guess it was him or Tom Curran probably in the end, and Tom Curran probably played a little bit better in that series against Pakistan, and that was enough to sway kind of 4 years of thinking decided at the last minute. Must have been so tough. Who, by the way, would you give the new ball to? Would you give it to Wood and Archer, have all the pace up front, or would you give Chris Wokes, the man who's been taking most wickets for us in those first 10 overs for the last couple of years?
I'd give it to Chris Wokes. You know, for me, he's been a fantastic England bowler in all formats, but I think in one day cricket, I think he's got the skills. You know, a lot depends on the timing as well. You know, if England bowl first, Chris Wokes has got to have that ball in his hand. Yeah. He's got the skills. He can nip it in. He can nip it away. Jofra Archer, to me, having faced him last year and the year before, he's got a lot of pace. He is very skiddy. But for me, he's going to be very effective, more so against the left-handers. He doesn't really have the ability to take it away from the right-hander, not what I've seen at the moment. And I think from a left-hander's point of view, he sort of comes in. He doesn't have a big gather, so the ball almost gains pace off the wicket, and I think that's why he's so tricky, because it's almost quite zippy. And if you watch the way he bowls at left-handers, I think he's going to be a really tricky customer. You look at Mark Wood, who can take the ball away from the right-hander. So you suddenly put those two together. But for me, I would probably open with Archer and Wokes, okay, and I'd bring Mark Wood on.
It's not a bad little option, that, is it, to have another bloke coming on bowling 90 plus miles an hour. How, by the way, just because obviously it's not that often you speak to someone who's actually faced Jofra Archer, I mean, you watch him, and I think the line from Ben Stokes in the IPL playing with him in Rajasthan was that he'd never seen such a naturally gifted fast bowler. He does almost sort of jog up, doesn't he? And then it comes out to 93 miles an hour, you think, what? And you look at Mark Wood, who charges in, sort of gives it all his might, a little bit like Brett Lee used to do, and it kind of made sense that they were bowling 95 miles an hour. How, I don't know, how unnerving is it to see someone run up like that and then release it so quickly? I mean, does that make it harder to face just because it seems less logical that they're bowling that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, firstly, let's look at his action. I mean, it's quite languid. It sort of takes you back yesteryear to some of the great West Indians, doesn't it? You know, where they sort of almost, you know, you look at Ambrose, you looked at Welsh, you know, you look at the longevity that they had in the game. And I think that's what's really exciting for me about Archer, because not only has he got this pace, he's got the zip off the pitch, but I think he's got the ability to stay injury-free for a long period of time. You know, someone like Mark Wood, unfortunately, you know, is a bit more harder on the eye in terms of he runs and there's a lot of pressure going through that front foot. And, you know, I feel for him because, again, he offers something different. He's a bit shorter. But I think Jofra is, you know, looking at him as a specimen, he's a beautiful bowler. And you know, his action's languid. It's easy on the eye. He gathers pace. And so, you know, I think, you know, sort of looking at it again, it's about variety as well. You know, the different heights, the different trajectories. And I think Jofra brings that. And I think that's what's really exciting. I think the other talking point is obviously the two spinners. You know, we haven't said a lot about them. It's England's pace attack. You know, the injury concerns do worry me. But, you know, I think it's a big tournament for Adil Rashid. You know, I think he's somebody, for me, who's really grown over the last year and a half. You know, he's really matured. I think England have managed him very well. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on the spin bowling?
I think that if we've got Rashid, then we're fine. I think it's as simple as that. More wickets since the last World Cup, as a lot of people know. He's played a lot more games than a lot of those other candidates, to be fair, but he has been taking wickets regularly, you know, game in, game out for England. He's been a go-to man with the white ball. My worry is that he's got the shoulder injury. You know, we talk about the seam bowling options, the pace bowling options, having these kind of little niggles, and Adil Rashid's having injections in his shoulder. I don't like the sound of that, because Moeen Ali has been very solid and reliable, mainly as a number two spinner, a number two to Adil Rashid. But recently, you know, his bowling has not been setting the world light. His batting hasn't been either, to be completely honest. And I would be a little bit worried going into a World Cup game with Moeen Ali suddenly being our first choice spinner. Liam Dawson, you know, he was a late addition, but actually I think he could end up, if there was a fitness concern over Adil Rashid, he could end up being pretty much our number one spinner. And I guess the option they liked was that he takes it away from the right-hander as well. Obviously, Joe Denley in theory gives you that with his leg spin, but I think we all knew that it wasn't nearly as potent as what Adil Rashid offers. I think if Rashid is fit and firing, we'll be all right. Leg spin is going to be so key, you know, whether it's Rashid Khan trying to spin Afghanistan some unlikely victory, or whether it's, you know, someone like Rashid being key to England being favourites. I remember Steve James writing just last week, he thinks he is our single most important player. I mean, that is a massive debate, because there's about 10 of them that's all massively important. But I think Rashid fit and firing, we're fine. If there's an injury to Rashid, I would worry, I have to say.
This is Love Sport.
Right, we're back here at Love Sport Radio. We've got Derek Pringle, who England all-rounder and a mighty fine cricketer at that. Not quite yet, but anyway, we're going to be talking about England's bowling attack, and we've got we've been talking about it a lot, Guy, recently. I mean, I know that we had a chat about Adil Rashid and Moeen Ali, and look, I just wanted to pick up on that, to be honest with you, because I have a little bit of concern, and I think if I was in opposition really targeting England, I would have to go for the England bowlers, you know, and particularly the spin bowlers. You know,
would you, as a batsman, would you approach it thinking, I want to try and hit Adil Rashid out of the attack, knowing how important he is to us?
Absolutely.
Or would you not take that risk?
Look, in taking the risk, you know, you're giving potential wickets to Adil Rashid, and I think that's where he's been very good. I think we've got Derek on the line. Hello, Derek.
Yep, hello.
Derek,
good morning.
Nick Compton, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, Nick. You?
Yeah, very good, thanks, mate. We're just having a quick chat about England's bowling attack. I suppose a few worries about, you know, can they sustain that sort of intensity throughout the tournament? But and who would be your sort of opening attack going into the first match?
I think Jofra Archer and Chris Wokes would be my opening attack, I think.
With Mark Wood, first change.
Well, Mr. Steady one end and a guy to kind of attack the other end, got pace and bounce. Mark Wood has got the pace, but the one thing that slightly worries me is that, you know, in that Pakistan series, that's really flat pitches, and I think he's a skinner, and they kind of come on a little bit better to the bat than some bowlers. My slight question mark against Mark, but he's obviously got the pace. Very handy for cleaning up the, you know, pesky people in the lower middle order, maybe. But up front, I think some batsmen might quite relish facing.
And what about Adil Rashid? I mean, he's been such an important cog in England's sort of bowling attack. He's got a few shoulder concerns. There obviously are a few injury concerns. And how important is the front line England bowling attack to their chances?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because there was a stat knocking around the other day. In the last year, England's bowlers have conceded more per bowler or more per wicket or whatever than any other team in Test match or the Test match teams. So you know, they're the worst, as it were, but they keep winning, and that means the batsmen are performing brilliantly. So the question mark, as you rightly point out, is over the bowling. I think Rashid is a very important cog in those middle overs, as you say, when you can spread the field a little bit, and batsmen have to take risks against him if they want to score at seven and over. But the best teams make light of their problems. I mean, this is a good stress test for England in a way, if they have got a few problems, because they'll have to improvise. And I think you win tournaments by having to just, you know, you can never really go from start to finish in a tournament with your plan A. You have occasionally to go to plan B and maybe even C. And those are the teams that win.
Are you worried about the injuries, though? I mean, there has been a few worries.
Well, it's not ideal, but not really. I think... you know, as I've just pointed out, England's bowling actually has been the worst of those top teams. So the batting, I think, you know, we're used to carrying the burden, and we'll probably continue to do so. And that's seems in tip-top condition at the moment, the batting.
If there is an injury to one of those frontline three pace bowlers, Derek, I mean, if it's a choice between Tom Curran or Liam Plunkett coming in, would you worry at all about Liam Plunkett's confidence? He's gone from being a kind of absolute nailed-on selection to some people maybe saying he could have even missed out if the whole squad, you know, for Jofra Archer coming in. Is he going to be affected by that at all, or is he still going to be able to perform at the level we've seen him at the last few years?
Well, Liam, I don't know if you know his backstory, but Liam's had a lot of problems to overcome in his career. He lost his run-up completely at one stage. He's, you know, had a big thing hanging over his head where he was going to donate a kidney to his dad, and that would have probably ended his career as well. He's come through both those things, as you say, to become one of England's sort of most steady bowlers in those middle overs. I think he'll cope with it pretty well. I mean, he's a very experienced guy, and... I like him a lot. He's sort of very centred, Liam Plunkett. Doesn't get carried away.
I was watching something on Sky the other day, and I saw him in the background of one of those shots, you know, how the 2007 World Cup was won. Obviously, England weren't playing a very prominent part in that programme, but he was there, I think, in the background. He's been around such a long time. He's kind of the old man of the team, isn't he? But you feel like he does have so much to offer if he does get that chance. I mean, people say his pace is a little bit down, but you're still confident he's got that wicket-taking ability if he is called upon in those middle overs.
Well, I mean, you know, when you say, you know, get the captain throws you the ball and says, get me a wicket, it's not always going to happen. I mean, he's got a game plan, and he's stuck to it, and it's served him pretty well. You know, he bowls slow ball bouncers, he bowls a hard length just on off stump, cross seam. So he mixes his pace up pretty well, and it's worked well for him. Now, whether it's going to get you wickets, I don't know. I mean, you'd think that at this stage, you know, in the evolution of one-day cricket, most batsmen, if they've played a lot of one-day cricket, they would have seen all those variations. But, you know, when you've got a run rate of, you know, you need to get between six and eight and over, you know, it puts pressure on the batsman, and that's how he gets his wicket. So, you know, it may not always work, but he's pretty dependable, I'd say.
Derek, I want to take you back a few years, only a few years, of course. England have obviously done a lot of meticulous preparation for this World Cup. Has that been a sort of, you know, in terms of comparing it, not that you can, but, you know, how sort of prepared are this England team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I suppose Andrew Strauss was in position, wasn't he, as the general manager of England cricket when they started planning for this World Cup. I think you know it's good to plan, but you could overdo it. I mean, you know, as you say, going back to I think that 92 World Cup where we got to the final, two of the big decisions in that World Cup didn't happen until the last minute, just before we went to Australia, because we'd been warming up in New Zealand, had a Test match tour and a few one days there. And me taking the new ball was one of the things that happened, and Ian Botham opening the batting is one of the things that happened. And until the penultimate one dayer, we didn't do that. I mean, you know, I did it in the last two one dayers that we played in New Zealand. He did it in the last one day we played in New Zealand, and that we stuck with it and got to the final. I'm not saying as a result of that necessarily, but you know, they weren't even on the horizon a month earlier. So you know, you can plan all you like, but in the end, as I say, the best teams, you're going to be pushed off course from your plan A. You're going to have a good, robust plan B.
I know there's still about 50 games of cricket to be played before we get there. But if we do get to the final, Derek, I mean, you know, speaking to someone who did a decent job, 3 for 22, I see on the scorecard back in 92, taking that new ball. How are we
They didn't wind up at it like they do these days.
Yeah, would you have fancied your chances against Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma?
Well, I always say if you can shift the ball, you know, sideways, whether off the seam or in the air, people who play a lot of shots always give you a chance. It might not be your day. You might go for plenty, but on the other hand, you might pick up three or four wickets. So you never know.
I'm not sure it's going sideways on these pitches, Derek.
No, that's the problem. That is the problem with one-day cricket these days. That ball doesn't seem to do anything. The pitches don't do anything. The boundaries are the grounds are 15% smaller.
They are.
So I fear for the poor old bowler, really.
Well, listen, there's always other ways of trying to get batsmen out, and we sort of get to the point of sledging, which we're coming on to a little bit later. I mean, you didn't mind a word or two, and, you know, what do you think of the way it's been governed at the moment?
I rarely said anything myself. I mean, people would have sledged me, you know, good fast bowlers, mainly Australians. West Indians never sledged anybody, and they were the best team of my sort of career. Listen, I don't know. I mean, persistent kind of mindless slagging people off, I think, has to be stomped on. But you know, the odd bit of chirp from now and then, I don't think helps anybody. I don't know. I mean, we live in an era where people take offence very quickly. So
yes. A little bit too over-governed in my point. We want some characters coming up. We want to see a bit of that niggly kind of edge, don't we? But look, Derek, big thank you for coming on Love Sport today.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Love Sport.
Guys, welcome back to Love Sport. And yeah, all things England cricket and World Cup. I mean, it's hugely exciting. I think the time has come now, Guy, where we have to really talk about England's chances. Have they got the greatest chance they've ever had?
Yeah, they do, definitely. I mean, tournament favourites have been for a long time, world number ones for well over a year now. I think everything points to England, but I think obviously being English, being here in England, reading English media, you forget a little bit, don't you, about the threats that some of the other teams pose. We obviously had a recent series against Pakistan and they were a bit disappointing, I think it would be fair to say. They scored a lot of runs, to be fair, and that was a bit of a worry from an English bowling perspective, but what Pakistan, I think, traditionally have been good at in white ball cricket has been, you know, at the death. When it gets really tense, they've been able to execute their skills, if you like to use that bit of jargon that we hear so much of. And that was a little bit surprising. Of course, they did that so well in the Champions Trophy just 2 years ago. But there are a couple of other teams out there, aren't there? You know, outside of England and India, who are the two favourites, that I think people are really expecting to not necessarily cause a lot of surprises, but certainly ruffle some feathers and be strong contenders to reach that last four.
So come on, put it on the spot here. What's the final? Give me a final.
The final...
Well, give me a semi-final, two semi-finals.
The two semi-finals, England and India are going to be in there. And I think Australia are actually coming into a good bit of form at the right time. And their record in the World Cup is second to none, obviously. And then I'm going to go with New Zealand, because I think that all the way through the team, you know, at the top and the bottom of the order, they've got players good at the right things. Mm. And they've, you know, played a fair bit here in the last few years. And they're extremely well led by one of the best batsmen around, Kane Williamson. So I think that they're kind of the best of the rest, if you like, outside of those big two or three. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think New Zealand, definitely. I mean, they've performed so well in World Cups, you know. I think West Indies, for me. And I mean, a lot's been said about them. Okay, they don't potentially have, you know, it's not a team that's sort of full of, you know, you sort of don't expect them potentially to get to the semi-final or final. But, you know, I wouldn't count them out. They've got a lot of world-class players in terms of the Andre Russells and the Shai Hopes, a very talented young player. You know, Hetmyer's an exceptional player. You know, Chris Gayle, okay, he's old, but still performs in these big tournaments. Yeah. You know, you get him on a nice flat track at the Oval. We know what he can do, you know. And I think all I would say is that if I was England, I wouldn't want to be playing the West Indies in a knockout phase, you know, for
just
example, the
semi.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they do have those players, and I think they mustn't be underestimated. It's so many indeterminables. It's really hard to work out, you know, how this is going to go. I think the group stages will be fairly formulaic, but as you know, a cloudy day in the semi final. Okay. My big worry is really the sort of semi final, the games that count, you know, because it almost takes you back to sort of Olympics, in the sense that, you know, it's one game, it's one day, it's one chance. You know, Chris Gayle comes off and just has a blinder, and your hopes are gone. You know, and that is why I think it's so exciting.
The universe, boss. Have you ever been on a cricket field?
I've been in
time?
The gym with him, and that was intimidating. Was that enough? Scary? Yeah, I think he had his wife beater on, and I sort of, you know, I definitely let him finish his set before I tried to get in there.
Have you been, I suppose, more relevantly on a cricket field at a time where he's really teed off?
I have.
Being one of those special innings.
Yeah, well, I played in the Champions League with Somerset, the one we got to the final. I mean, it was as an experience, I mean, I put that down to one of the most incredible experiences ever. It was, you know, sort of IPL format. We're playing at Bangalore against the Bangalore Royal Challengers, Bangalore. And Chris Gayle walked out to bat, and actually Joss Butler, of all people, I was at extra cover. Joss Butler was at mid-off. He skied one up in the air, went over my head. Joss Butler ran down, who, you know, in terms of, I know he's a wicketkeeper, but as a fielder, he's pretty exceptional too. And he dropped the universe, boss. And I remember him being so, it dropped, and I was like, oh no. And I looked at him in the eyes, and he went on to smash about 85 off. I mean, it must have been, it was just incredible. I mean, you know, he was towing balls that were just going over the boundary. And yeah, look, so I have been there. I can see the, you know, obviously he's a big man. He's got that intimidatory factor. He is a bit older now. He doesn't run between the wickets very well. So, you know, he either has to come off or he doesn't, you know.
But we saw, didn't we, just in, what, March, in that series in the West Indies, I think he got 200s in those first two games. The second of them in particular, it was after Joss Butler had hit 150. And we thought, well, this game's done. You know, let's all, you know, go home. And I think there was a football game on that night, and most people were watching that instead. And then suddenly you check the cricket score and you say, hang on a minute, something's happening here. And Gayle had hit 100 off 50 balls as well. And at 39 years old, it is quite remarkable. I know, as you say, there's not a lot of running, there's not a lot of athleticism, but the ability he's still got to hit a ball out the ground. And what it makes me think, we're going to talk a bit more about South Africa later on, because they're obviously England's first opponents, but it just makes me regret even more the fact that we're not seeing another of the modern greats, AB de Villiers, who's a few years younger than Chris Gayle and is obviously retired from international cricket now. And I just think it's such a shame that, you know, if Chris Gayle can do it at 39, then AB de Villiers surely had one more really big tournament in him. And obviously South Africa have had their problems, and maybe de Villiers has been part of those teams that have been underwhelming at World Cups in the past. But it is a massive shame that we're not going to see him, is it?
Oh, it's a huge shame. I spoke to him yesterday, actually, funnily enough, not trying to drop in too many names, but just pick that one up. Try and get him on the show. But he's obviously trying to stay a little bit away from the World Cup. I think it must be hard for him. You know, I know the decision that he's made has been a very difficult one for him, you know, to walk away and to sort of focus on the IPL and focus on these T20 competitions. I don't blame him. He's done a huge amount for South African cricket. We mustn't forget that. But, you know, the World Cup is about watching the best players. You know, this is their time. This is their chance. And a World Cup without AB de Villiers, a bit like if Virat Kohli wasn't playing, or, you know, Steve Smith, you know, David Warner, you need these big players. You know, this is why the crowds come in. And, you know, I just a little bit about Australia, sort of the Steve Smith and sort of turning our attention slightly, because they've gone largely under the radar. We could talk about sledging a little bit and what have you. I mean, I think David Warner and, and Steve Smith. I think David Warner in particular is going to be up, you know, under a bit. And I almost feel like it might bring out the best in him. I sort of have a feeling that Australia are quite lucky because normally they come into World Cups or big tournaments and they are firm favourites or, you know, right up there. But, you know, I have a feeling this might help them a little bit.
I don't see it having an adverse effect. The problem is, look, I'm going to be at some of these games. I'm going to an Ashes test later in the summer. I think we'll all get involved because it's part of the fun, isn't it, to make Aussies pantomime villains. And I think even if they score loads of runs after doing it, we're not going to stop as fans because that's part of what we're paying to go and do. You know, as wrong as that might be, or as hard to understand for some non-cricket fans, that is part of what cricket and England versus Australia partly is all about. But we saw even at Southampton, didn't we, over the weekend? Okay, Warner didn't make a huge score, but he didn't look bothered by the boos. And in fact, I think you're right. I think they'll like it. Steve Smith obviously made a century, sort of said afterwards something like, I didn't really notice. I mean, these guys play in the biggest stadiums in the world in front of, you know, 80,000 screaming Indians like week in, week out in the IPL. Yeah. David Warner, of course, the top run scorer there. It worries me a little bit. It does. And I was looking at their record. They won their last 8 ODIs before their most recent warm-up games, both of which they won, of course, including thrashing against Sri Lanka yesterday.
It's 13 out of 14, isn't it? I think it is. Like that. And I guess the point you come to is beware the wounded animal in many ways, you know. And I think you look at Australia's bowling attack. I mean, it's at full fire, at full strength. It's a really formidable bowling attack. You know, Steve Smith, Warner being in such great form. Let me tell you, I think Australia are going to be a real force to be reckoned with. And I know Justin Langer well, having played with him and playing against him. And, you know, I think that sort of strength of character could really, you know, sort of, you know, really put them up there. But look, going a little bit left field, I suppose you've got also the likes of Bangladesh, Afghanistan, who have been really, I mean, Afghanistan's rise in international cricket has been fantastic.
It has been remarkable. Like, you know, Derek Pring was talking a minute ago about Liam Plunkett, some of the adversity he's faced. And actually, I don't think it is known by that many people, all the stuff he's had to go through. But you talk about adversity and Afghanistan will kind of raise you about 10 levels from that, won't they? And it's incredible. You know, it's their second World Cup in a row. And, you know, we saw England thrash them at the Oval yesterday, and you kind of hope that there's not too many repeats of that. But I'm personally quite optimistic that it won't be the case that they'll have 9 thrashings in the group stage and go home kind of tail between their legs and a little bit cautious about coming back to another World Cup. I think even if it's just 2 or 3 players, they've got those X Factor players that, you know, are good enough to perform against the very best out there. You know, they've done it. Rashid Khan, whether it's here in the 2020 leagues or in the 2020 leagues around the world, and they've got destructive batsmen as well. And on the right day, as you talk about, on the right day, if it comes off, they could cause an upset. I really do believe that.
Absolutely. Not just the English and the Australians. Watch out, Afghanistan and Bangladesh. You never know in these World Cup formats. Right, if you're going to the World Cup, you better bring a full wallet, that is for sure, because champagne is £100, £13 for a pizza. Oh, my God. Our fans being priced out of this game. We'll be discussing all that very shortly.
This is Love Sport.
Right, welcome back to Love Sport. I'm Nick Compton. Just getting back to the pricing. And we're just saying that you're going to need to take a full wallet with you because some of these prices, I mean, £13 for a pizza, £20 for a tie, £100 champagne. I mean, look, I remember the West Indies doing the World Cup many years ago. I can't remember which year it was. I mean, it was
2007. Yeah.
And, you know, a place like the Caribbean, you know, everyone, you know, there's hardly anyone in the stadium. Yeah. Tickets were too expensive. You've got to get it right, haven't you?
You have to think very carefully about how you price these things because obviously that is a massive factor in how much of a success a World Cup is. For example, last time England hosted the World Cup, 1999, we know how terribly that went, but it was still a really, from a home perspective, that is. But overall, the tournament was a massive success because in the later stages, we were still drawing big crowds, mainly thanks to India and Pakistan and the sort of subcontinental populations that we have here in the UK. And they were turning out in huge numbers. And that convinced, for example, Channel 4 that actually cricket was a popular enough game for them to want to have the live coverage of, and that sort of helped take it away from the BBC. And that was quite a significant development of that World Cup, an accidental one if you like, but it shows how much a part of any tournament the fans are, whether that's football. We talked so much about the Qatar World Cup and the problems that's going to have. And I do worry a little bit seeing some of these headline numbers, and you've got to be careful, I suppose, a bit to you know, not get carried away by thinking everything is this price. I'm going to a game, for example, on Sunday at the Oval, Bangladesh versus South Africa. Okay, that's not a huge game. It's one, you know, pretty big team against a small team, but that's a 20 quid ticket, which I think is very reasonable, and I don't think you could really complain about that. The problem is the England games, which are realistically what everyone wants to go to, you're paying a minimum of four times that. You know, I spoke to someone who's going to England West Indies down at Southampton. That's a 90 quid ticket, and that won't be for, you know, anything fancy. It won't be corporate or anything like that. And you look at some of these prices, I know it's the Oval, the ones you're quoting, and that's London going to be a little bit higher, but I've been to some of the grounds around the country in the last couple of years, and you're not paying an awful lot less, even at normal kind of county games or lower key international matches. And I do worry a little bit. I know cricket maybe has a better off following than, say, football or rugby do on average, but at the same time, you don't want to put people off by giving the impression you're fleecing them. I mean, do players ever think about that, by the way? You know, if you're, you know, representing your country, would it ever sort of occur to you, you know, is there extra pressure? Because if you're at Lords, for example, where people have paid 100 plus quid for a ticket, thinking, I really feel the need to actually, like, put on a good show, or is that not something that comes into the equation?
No, I don't think you actually, I mean, I'd be a bit worried if the players were thinking about that going on to a World Cup game, but look, it is something. I mean, look, I think if you walk into a ground where, you know, perhaps the stadium isn't full or there are seats empty, you do wonder. And I think for me, you know, looking at the bigger picture, let's talk about the bigger picture here, because really, you know, English cricket, Test cricket, One Day cricket, you know, there's a lot of formats. There's 100 ball crickets coming. I think if ever there's a time that cricket needs to really flourish, I think this World Cup is it. And I feel that it's almost more important that people walk away from this World Cup with a good feel factor. You know, take away the price. It's got to be a good feel factor. You know, this has got to be a buzzing World Cup. You know, I think it's got the makings of a fantastic tournament. But you want people to walk away thinking, you know, I had a great day today. You know, my kids absolutely loved it. You know, we weren't fleeced. But I just hope the ICC have got this right. You know, I think ticket prices are one thing. But I think when you get into the ground and you're paying £20 for a burger, you know, for me, that's an issue, you know. And
it massively puts you off going back, doesn't it? Even if you enjoy this game, if, you know, there's a next One Day series next year or whatever it might be, you'll think, well, hang, the last time I went to the cricket, it cost me and my two kids 300 quid, and exactly, I can't afford to do that again. I can't, you know, I need to put that towards a holiday.
Well, particularly when you look at the ECB sort of, you know, vision for cricket now with the 100 ball, it's about getting a different demographic into the game. You know, ICC said something this morning, I read, just about how 200,000 tickets were bought by people who had previously not who weren't cricket watchers, so to speak. I mean, that's a good stat to know, and, you know, it'd be nice to go further into that. But it's all very well getting them to a one-off game at the World Cup, but will they come next year? Will they come to the Ashes? Will that sustain itself? Will that continue? And for me, that is a bit of an issue. And, you know, we're obviously a hugely multicultural society, loads of different nationalities, and you know, that will be represented in the crowd. So should all teams, I mean, it should mean that all the teams are well supported, I guess.
It should make for a great atmosphere, even outside, like, England are the only team that can create a good atmosphere. But what I mean is, obviously, any World Cup where there is a home team involved, you expect them to be the best followed and the most noisily supported. But as we talked about, the 99 World Cup and the big sort of Asian populations coming out to support their teams, I think we're going to see that again. I mean, has there ever been an instance where, playing for England in particular, you felt at one of these grounds? Because I remember last summer at Edgbaston when we played India, huge amounts of Indian support because of the huge Indian population around there. And, you know, for the India-Pakistan game at Old Trafford, what was it, 250,000 ticket applications? I mean, the numbers of fans there are for these teams as well is huge. I mean, that's going to be a benefit to the tournament, isn't it? And, you know, I suppose maybe that's where they're exploiting people a little bit, because they know that these people love cricket so much they can charge 80 quid a ticket, 20 quid for a burger and 50 quid for a glass of champagne or whatever the ludicrous prices are. But it's the support is vital, isn't it? It's not just how it looks on TV. It's actually for the players
Absolutely.
To enjoy playing. And it gets more out of you, I imagine, when you've got a crowd singing and chanting and making noise behind you, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. There'll be support for all the teams, you know. They'll be everywhere, you know.
Except Australia, maybe.
Well, maybe Australia. They might have flown a few over, we don't know. But anyway, look, I think we've dealt with that. I think,
by the way, at the Oval, 10 quid. 10 quid for a tea towel.
I mean,
can't be right, can it?
Yeah, no, it can't be right. So, you know, try and, if you can, sort of get in your own drinks or bring something in through your, you know, under your jacket, then give it a go. But no, like, honestly, I think it's going to be a fantastic World Cup. I just hope that doesn't affect it. We've got such good cricket on show, and I think we need to really, I mean, look, all things sort of point towards that first game now with South Africa, England. You know, look, you can probably tell from the horrible twang in my voice that I grew up in South Africa. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that game. I'm not sure South Africa are as strong as they have been in previous World Cups. We alluded to AB de Villiers. Mm. You know, these first games, you know, both teams will be nervous, won't they?
They will. Is this a good opponent for England to start their World Cup campaign against? Because there's two arguments, aren't there? You could start it against a minnow and go, that's an easy win. You could have, like, the Afghanistan game yesterday. If that was our first World Cup game, be brilliant. It'd be like, you know, winning your first game 6-0 at the Football World Cup. Or
no, I like it. I like it a lot. You know why? Because I think England are ready. England have been ready for some time now, and I think it's about getting straight into it. You know, they don't need any warm-up games now. They don't need any sort of soft kind of approach to winning Bangladesh or thrashing Bangladesh by 200 runs. They need to play the best teams. They need to be tested by the likes of Rabada, by the likes of Ngidi. I mean, you know, South Africa, I wouldn't say they're sort of a reversal of England, but they've definitely got one of the stronger bowling attacks. You know, Imran Tahir was the most successful IPL bowler. You know, he's 40 years old.
He's the only player older than Chris Gayle.
And he's a phenomenal person and cricketer. I mean, his zest for the game of cricket and what he brings to that South African team, I think, is huge experience. But for me, Rabada is the find. I mean, for me, the best fast bowler going around. You've got Dale Steyn, who probably a bit like, you know, obviously a world legend, a bit like Liam Pluckett, slightly on the decline, pace down a little bit. So, you know, but, you know, you've got a backup bowler like Dale Steyn. I mean, you know, this is a very good South African team. The batting lineup worries me.
Yeah, it's not as strong as it would be with AB de Villiers. It's not as strong as it's been in the past, but you could argue that all you like. They never won a World Cup with those great players, with Graham Smith or with AB de Villiers. So you could sort of say, well, they didn't work, so why not give this lot a go? And there was only 12 overs, I think, played in the game against the West Indies down at Bristol, but I watched the start of that on Sunday morning. Hashim Amla, I know he's struggled quite badly the last couple of years, but he was looking as good as ever. And if he has come into form at the right time, you know, he still averages 50 in one-day cricket, having averaged probably 30 for the last couple of years. That's how good a player he was. And if he could get back to that for one last hurrah, then along with Quinton de Kock, who is an unbelievable white ball player, Faf du Plessis, we've got incredible batsmen to talk about. Aidan Markram as well, a brilliant player in all forms of the game.
There's a guy called Van der Dussen who I think's got very good temperament. I think he's a very good young player. And I think, you know, you've got a guy like, you know, Miller, for example. You know, I think David Miller is someone I do want to talk about, because one of the reasons being is that he's played in all these world tournaments, you know, but never really sort of taken it to the fore. He's never really, you know, he's played some good innings. He's clearly got the brawn, the strength. And you almost sort of try and think now, he needs to be that kind of Jos Buttler type player for South Africa if they want to proceed. You know, I think, you know, I think South Africa have only, you know, got over the 300 mark sort of four times in the last sort of year. I was reading, whereas England have done it in the last five matches.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's a shock, isn't it? If England don't get that.
Well, look, no, I think the point comes is, and I go back to Greg Chappell's article saying that the best bowling attacks will win this World Cup. And, you know, if that's the case, then South Africa needs to be looked at.
Can we talk just quickly about Lungai Ngidi, who is, I think, to a lot of us, not someone we know that much about, but I was reading the other day, he's an extremely promising young bowler, he's highly rated. Is he going to be potentially one of those breakthrough stars at this World Cup? Is he potentially there already, or is he one for, like, the next World Cup?
No, I think he's ready. He's been playing a bit for South Africa. He's done well in Test cricket. He's done well in one-day cricket. They've got pace. He's a little bit different to Rabada in the sense that Rabada almost can take the ball away from the right. I think Ngidi sort of angles it in a little bit more, has a slightly different trajectory, but he's a big boy as well. So he's got some real strength that he bowls with the shoulder. You know, the two of them, you know, it's really exciting for South Africa, you know. And, you know, the one thing I do like, I'm a big fan of Faf du Plessis. I think as a leader, he's as good as South Africa have had in a long time. I think he's very level-headed. I think, you know, just reading some of the comments, you always get a few hints here and there. I like the fact that South Africa go under the radar in this tournament. You know, so often they come in with big high hopes. And he was saying yesterday, his quote was that we try to always do something special. We always felt we needed to do something extra special, when actually all they needed to do is just keep doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I think taking that sort of pressure off them, you know, again, They're a little bit left field. They're a little bit outside the sort of focus, and they could be a dangerous team.
Well, we were looking at odds earlier, weren't we? And they're level with New Zealand at 10-1 as the joint fourth favourites, which for a team with so much talent, especially so much bowling talent, Kagiso Rabada, I think, was the only bowler quicker than Jofra Archer in the IPL. So we're getting excited about him. Rabada's a sort of a level up. So definitely a dangerous team and possibly, as you say, a bit under the radar. I just wanted to ask a little bit, as you alluded to already, you grew up in South Africa. You know and have known a lot of their guys over the years well. Was it strange playing in South Africa for England against South Africa, against guys you knew well on an international level? You know, obviously you weren't the only guy, English, you know, player with South African links as well. Did that make it a strange fixture? Did that add needle to it, or was it quite friendly?
It was quite friendly, actually. I mean, surprisingly friendly. I mean, it was a very nice South African cricket team. You know, I think, you know, missing people like Graham Smith, etc., probably made a difference, to be honest. I think having someone like Amy de Villiers at the fore, who's a lovely man, Hashim Amla, who I actually grew up with. I played cricket at school with Hashim. I played representative cricket with him. And, you know, I can't speak higher for the man. But, you know, look, just quickly, going back to Durban to play in that first test match for England, batting at number three, you know, I grew up at that ground. You know, I played tennis ball cricket at the ground. I sort of spent a junior childhood, you know, dreaming about playing at that ground. And I think to go out there and win that test match with England was a very special moment for me. But
you made test centuries, of course, but was that actually that game and making runs there, was that the most special?
I think it probably was. I think it was. Dad and mum being there and family, friends, etc., and going to a ground that I sort of went to when I was sort of 7 or 8 years old and watching heroes play there. And to go back and actually walk out and face that first ball from Dale Steyn was very special.
Love sport.
All right, I'm Nick Compton here. We're talking about sledging, Guy, just before the break. And obviously the ICC are going to clamp down on sledging by monitoring stump microphones at all times. They're obviously very focused on the homophobia and racism, which they should be. And I suppose this follows on from West Indies bowler Shannon Gabriel when he was banned for 4 one-day games after using a homophobic slur towards Joe Root, who responded by saying there's nothing wrong with being gay.
It was a weird one where he got banned for something that we didn't actually hear. And it was only by Joe Root's response, which made him something of a, I guess, actually a hero to a lot of people, not just gay people, but especially within the gay community. It was like, this is brilliant. This is quite a landmark moment. A straight, high-profile sportsman, the England cricket captain, speaking out publicly without knowing, actually, supposedly, that he was going to get picked up saying this. It was quite a significant moment, and I think quite impressive from Root, a sign of his leadership and maturity and everything. But from an actual player's perspective...
I think there was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, though, wasn't it?
Do you think there was?
Well, I don't think Shannon Gabriel sort of was really alluding to the fact that he thought Joe Root was gay. I mean, you know, Joe Root's married with kids, and, you know, he sort of...
Yeah.
I think it was just more a playground. Angry, sort of frustrated, you know, little go, and Joe sort of made a sort of snide remark.
Yeah, true. I think we were on top of that particular session, which made it a little bit easier for Root to respond like that. You're right. But as a player, a stump microphone's a bane of your life. I mean, is it something that plays on your mind?
It is. Yeah. It is. And you know, to come in with that, it is something that is quite frustrating. I know that Matt Prior, actually, when we played against India and other teams, you know, he was quite clever at using the stump microphone. Okay. At times when perhaps he wanted something to be
heard.
Wasn't
there something about a Ferrari or someone like... He kept mentioning... Oh, that was it. He kept mentioning a certain car near the stump microphone, hoping it would get picked up and hoping that you get free car. I don't think it worked.
Listen, I wouldn't put it past him, but Matt was quite... He was quite clever like that. I think, you know, it was Strauss, Prior... Graham Swan was very clever and had, you know, so when you talk about sledging and sort of where does that line fit? I mean, look, that's the big question, you know, and I suppose there is, looking at this quote from CEO of ICC, David Richardson, you know, so the definition of sledging is obviously difficult to make, but one of the priorities and briefings we've given to all teams in the World Cup is obviously behaviour. These are quotes from him. Any malicious personal comments will not be tolerated. That includes any kind of racism or homophobia. We have not brought in any special rules for World Cup, but our new code of conduct, which came in earlier this year, does apply. So I suppose there will be more severe punishment. Look, I come from a slightly old school nature in that I just hope it doesn't dull it down too much. You know, I like characters in the game. I like seeing players, you know, having a little word here and there. You want to see a bit of that niggle. And, you know, I think my only worry is, you know, even when I played, you know, as soon as there was a bit of niggle, you know, I remember James Anderson, who was, you know, quite likes to have a word. He's a grumpy fast bowler, as they should be. You know, as soon as he starts having a word, you suddenly see the umpires twitching and walking towards the players. And I think, hang on a minute, there's nothing going on here. You know, just they're having a bit of a word, just leave it.
These are grown men we're talking about, aren't they? At the top of their game, it's understandable if things boil over a little bit. And actually, you don't want to curb that competitive edge, do you? And I guess the difference that a lot of people would try and make is between whether there's any kind of any humour, if you like, even if it's a bit of an unfriendly joke, if it's still a joke, compared to just plain abuse, right? And I think that's going to be the issue we're going to have with the Australians in particular, because Warner and Smith are going to get booed to the crease, they're going to get stuff shouted at them. All Australians do in England, English players do in Australia. That's just what happens. But the difference, say, for me as a paying fan, I will really enjoy and get stuck into singing along the songs. You know, I've heard the Barmy Army a couple of 10 different songs or whatever. If they're funny and if they're fun to sing, people are going to love singing along with them. But is there a difference between that and just shouting you this, you that, you all that, you know, every swear word under the sun? That's not clever, is it? It's not good for young fans coming to the game.
No.
It's not encouraging them to take the sport further, is it?
No, the image of the game is obviously vitally important. You know, it want to be played in the right spirit. We want good competitiveness. You know, Rabada, for example, you know, South Africa. Yeah. I mean, he you know, he's a fiery character. He's been done a few times.
He's had a few points on his license.
He has. Of course he has. And you want fast bowlers to have that reputation, really. You want Rabada to get stuck in and to have a few words. And you know, it's a hard one to govern. And I also think from a player's perspective, you've got to work out who you want to sledge. You know, for me as an England team, leave David Warner alone. Mm. You know, you want to fire someone up. You want to get someone going. There's enough going on in the crowd. And if I was saying to the Barmy Army, I would almost go dead quiet. I wouldn't sing songs about it. Of course they're going to, and it's going to be a lot of fun and everyone's going to join in. But actually, I think you're almost playing into his hands.
I do get where you're coming from, and I fear that we won't take your advice and that he'll score 600 runs in the series and they'll end up winning.
It'll get louder and louder. And yeah.
There was that one incident, though, wasn't there, where he reacted very badly to, I think it was actually Philip Hughes' brother, Jason, called him a disgrace in a state.
I actually played for that team. Right. I played with Philip Hughes and Jason Hughes at Western Suburbs. Yeah, okay. And he called them an absolute disgrace, and he lost.
But is that quite tame for that team? Are they normally a little bit more on it with the sledging, or is it?
It was funny. I mean, I played with Phil and Mitchell Stark, who's playing in the World Cup, and Jason Hughes had a bit of a go at him. I thought that was quite funny, actually, and I think David Warner's probably a little bit proud and probably took that a bit serious. But I think he would have had some training. He would have spoken about this. I think Justin Langer and the team would have addressed this. But, you know, I think, look, it is funny when you do hear a good sledge, but I don't know how funny they're going to be towards him.
Have you got any broadcastable ones that you were either victim of or you're particularly proud of that you came up with yourself?
Oh dear, you know,
emphasis on broadcastable.
I think when I came in, I kind of tended to keep quite quiet. I think I wasn't sort of, I didn't feel senior enough to sort of, you know, get on the front foot. And I always felt as an opening batsman, the odds were counted against you, you know, so best keep quiet. But I have heard some great ones. I think, you know, Matt Pryor was fantastic. I mean, you know, it wasn't so much what was said, it was the niggly way that they kept going at somebody, you know, just keep chipping away, keep chipping away. You get to know your players, you get to know the ones that can drown it out. And, you know, everyone has their boiling point, you know, and I think that's what you try and find as a player. But, you know, as ICC and Dave Richardson have said, you know, there's got to be a line about that. Yeah. And I think, you know, young players, we do want to encourage the young players to come and watch these games. We want to see them take most, you know, all the attributes really of these players, take them into their school cricket, into their club cricket, and take it forward. But I think the crowd will be funny. I think the Barmy Army, they're always great fun. I've always enjoyed playing under them. The songs that they sing, you know, I think they'll add a huge amount of atmosphere to these games.
Definitely. And just lastly, we've got a whole summer to make predictions, to correct predictions, and relive the bad ones. But very quickly, first Nick Compton Cricket World Cup show, who are your four semi-finalists?
Look, I'm going to go for Australia, England. I'm going to go for India. And I'm going to go with the West Indies.
Okay.
Just a little bit left field. You know, they perform well in World Cups, as do New Zealand. But I just have a feeling that, you know, others would be a little bit too predictable.
Okay.
What about you, fair guys? Enough. Come on, give me your predictions.
No, I think I'm with you on three of those. New Zealand, I'm going to put over the West Indies. But I think maybe on one of our next shows, we'll talk a little bit more about India, because you're not completely convinced, are you, that they're quite all they're cracked up to be, or certainly in these English conditions?
I don't know. I think that they could be very good. I think they've got a good bowling attack. You know, the Bumrahs, who's been an exceptional bowler, really add something different. They've got two spinners now. I think a lot of the world has seen them now. Batsmen, you know, a lot of hopes on Virat Kohli. You know,
he's not bad, is he?
No, he's not bad at all, is he? God, I've enjoyed watching him. But I think he is somebody that that really needs to shine. You know, I think it's... Look, bringing it back to England, you know, for me, Joss Butler, it could be his tournament. I hope it's his tournament. And I really hope that England can stay fit. Because I think if they stay fit and the likes of Jofra Archer really gain momentum, become a sort of superstar on this World Cup stage, I think it's England's to win. I have a feeling, I know we've spoken about it before, and it comes down to pressure and home, but I just feel there's something different about this England team. I think that they are prepared mentally. I think they're not going to fold under this pressure. They've been at it for a long time. But look, Guy, I can only say a huge thanks to you, mate. It's been, that's my lot for the day. Thanks for tuning into the first Nick Compton Cricket World Cup show. We're back again tomorrow, same time from 10 to 11. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.